Thanks, Arya. And I guess thanks, Justin and Kevin and whoever else was involved in bringing me here. Also, Saria for organizing this seminar. So as Saria said, the title of the talk is Decategorifying the Singular Support of Coherent Sheaves. So I didn't quite know what the background of a lot of people in the audience might be, so I thought I'd start off with kind of a cartoon of what singular support is supposed to do. There's a lot of theories of singular support out there for several different types of objects. And so let me try to describe what these things all have in common. So I guess there will be roughly like three sections of this talk. And this first one, I'd say, is the introduction. Also, this is much nicer chalk than I thought it would be. Okay. So what's the basic idea of singular support? Okay, so I want to say that the basic idea is that there's many objects in geometry that have notions of smoothness, and notions of singularity. So smoothness and singularity, I'm going to put in scare quotes because I want to remain agnostic about what I mean by these things for the moment. What the singular support is supposed to tell you is tell you not only the location of the singularities in whatever objects you're considering, but also how they arise. So I'll write that as well. Oh, these can move. I see. So I'm going to give a few examples so you can see what I mean by location of singularities and how they arise. And when I say how they arise, I really mean in what direction they arise, but sort of what constitutes a direction will change on the context, so it's not always exactly what you think. What's the best way to do it? I mean, probably I can't move this all the way up here, can I? No. I'll just stick with these middle boards. Okay, so like I said in the beginning, there's many different existing forms of singular support, or many existing types or theories of singular support scattered throughout mathematics. And so I'm going to start with example zero, which would be the wavefront sets of distributions. So what do I want to say? And I won't spend too much time on any of these, but I just hope to give some sort of flavor. Okay, so there's a very classical theorem in the theory of distributions. By distributions, I mean generalized functions, so continuous dual to test functions. So there's this classical theorem called the Paley-Wiener theorem. And what the Paley-Wiener theorem tells you is that a distribution U is representable by a smooth function. So when I say representable, I mean representable as integration against a smooth function, if and only if the Fourier transform of this distribution is rapidly decreasing. So the Fourier transform of any distribution is going to be smooth. If it's additionally rapidly decreasing, it means your original distribution was itself secretly a smooth function. So why do I bring this theorem up? It's because this leads to the idea that the directions of phase space in which the Fourier transform is not rapidly decreasing are the ones responsible for the non-smoothness of our distribution. So directions of phase space in which not rapidly decreasing Okay, right, and so, oh, I repeated the word space right here, okay. Right, so the Fourier transform, whatever it is, I wanna say it lands you in phase space. You can think of this as like the cotangent bundle, or in the case that you're considering just distributions on Rn, it's also Rn, but like Rn dual. Okay, right, and so, oh no. Okay, how does this work? Say so. Okay. Okay, that's great. I think singular support, getting like a flavor for it, is best done by just a lot of examples. So here, oh, and so I should say, like, the collection of directions in which your function is not rapidly decreasing is called the wavefront set. So that's the word that I used up here, wavefront set at distribution. Okay, so quick example. This right here is, I want to say, the delta distribution on the y-axis inside of R2. So here is R2, and here is the y-axis. And this distribution is, I guess, the function 1 on the y-axis and 0 on the complement. And so this wavefront set here is going to be the conormal bundle to the y-axis inside of Rn. More or less, yeah. Okay, you can see that because in the complement of the y-axis, my function is 0, it's smooth, sort of trivially. On the y-axis, the y-directions themselves, it looks like a smooth function. So the non-smoothness is coming from the perpendicular directions to this y-axis. Okay. Any questions so far? Sure. Gotcha. Okay. All right, so that was example zero, and the reason I call it example zero is sort of a hidden historical remark. Just the idea of singular support and wavefront sets in this kind of way of thinking about your objects in terms of phase space or in terms of the cotangent bundle in this way came from the theory of distributions and from analysis to begin with. So, and I think it illustrates really nicely the ideas involved in here. Okay, so second example is one that some in the audience thought I might start with to begin, but it's sheaves on manifolds. So, right, so in the same way that, I told you that the notion of smoothness for a distribution is literal smoothness of the distribution. The notion of singularity is non-representability by the smooth function. What is the notion of smoothness for sheaves or singularity for sheaves, you might ask? Well, this notion, or like the notion of singularity for sheaves on a manifold M, is the failure of your sheaf to be locally constant. Okay, so So sheaves, I think of them as a generalization of vector bundles in which the local triviality condition of vector bundles is relaxed. So you can have fibers, you can have the dimension of your fibers jump point to point, et cetera. And this jumping, in a way, is a kind of singularity for this sheaf. So the failure to be a vector bundle is, in a way, a form of singularity for sheaves. And so if you want to record the directions in which these singularities arise, you get something called the singular support of your sheaf, and it lives in the cotangent bundle to M. So F is going to be a sheaf on M, and this is going to be a subset of M, and it records the directions of failure to be locally constant. And so just as I gave you an example for distributions, I'll give you an example for sheaves. So I'm going to basically choose the sheafy version of the distribution I picked over there. So let's ask, what is the singular support of the delta sheaf on the y-axis? So this is the sheaf given by, the proper push forward of the inclusion of the y-axis into R2. This is also going to be the conormal bundle. Okay, great. All right, so now I'm going to tell you finally about the one of the two players in the story in the title, or actually, I guess there was no second player in the title. But I'm going to tell you about a Rinkin-Gates-Corey singular support. And then after that, we'll get to sort of the meat of the talk. Okay, so example two. So Rinkin-Gates-Corey. So this is a notion of singular support for coherent sheaves. And the motivation for this definition is this observation by Dillon that if X is a smooth scheme, every coherent complex on X. And so throughout the talk, co will denote, the derived cat, the bounded derived category of coherent sheaves, just to ease up some notation. So every F is actually a perfect complex. So is a perfect complex. So this is an observation by Dillon. When X is singular, so when X is not a smooth scheme, co and perf are differ. So when X is singular, co of X is not the same as perf of X. So this difference is, in a sense, a measure of the singularity of your scheme. But you can also ask the question, given a coherent complex, how far is it from being a perfect complex? And this is the question that a Rinkin-Gates-Corey singular support is supposed to answer. It tells you that it actually gives you sort of a concrete measure of how far a particular thing is. First observation is by Dillon, second observation is by Rinkin-Gates-Corey. I feel like I should mention some other names here, but I forget them, who worked on notions of categorical support rather than the particular notion of singular support for coherent sheaves. So what a Rinkin-Gates-Corey did is say, they don't actually consider, all singular schemes, they restrict their attention to quasi-smooth schemes. And there's a version of this for stacks as well, but I'll keep it to schemes. So for Z, a quasi-smooth scheme, and let me remark here, quasi-smooth is a, I'll say, quasi-smooth derived scheme. Quasi-smooth here is the correct derived notion of LCI. So this is carved out by a finite number of equations from a smooth scheme. It's carved out in a derived way. So when I say derived scheme, I'm working with derived algebraic geometry here. The best way, so in case you haven't worked with it, the way I like to characterize this is to say, like in homological algebra, you're used to resolving modules via things like flat resolutions. If you're working with sheaves, you use flask resolutions, things like that. You can view derived algebraic geometry is resolving certain bad spaces by good spaces, or certain bad rings by good rings, by smooth rings. So you should think of this as sort of like a geometric or like space version maybe of homological algebra. And I mean, just to give a flavor of what these kind of things are in case you don't know it. So for Z, quasi-smooth derived scheme, they associate to each F in co of Z a singular support of F living inside the negative one-shifted cotangent bundle of Z. And I want to point out here, so you might ask, like, what is the connection between this thing and the original, like, cotangent spaces that we started with? Well, this is some kind of cotangent bundle. I don't know. I wanted to call this, like, shifted phase space. Okay, cool. Right. Okay, so let's try to do this more in a more civilized way. Okay, so I've told you what a ring Kongate-Skouri singular support is. Now you might be wondering, what do I mean by decategorify it?
Sorry. I mean, it's a slightly different language here. And so when you're saying that single support lies in this T star shifted by minus one, see what I mean. I've used a single support basically as a subset of this what they call sing.
So this is sing. Another name for this is sing.
C is a smooth scheme here. I'm confused about. Just symbolically, then you know have T star. I mean, what is a T star?
Right. So Z has a certain cotangent complex. Okay.
So it has its own cotangent bundle, right? So.
If Z is singular, it won't have a cotangent bundle, right? It'll have a cone or something like
this. Right. But what's if Z is smooth?
If Z is smooth, this is just Z. There's no fibers. It's just.
Okay. So it's not the shifted cotangent bundle.
No,
but when Z is smooth, right?
No, the shifted cotangent bundle is not Z. It's a derived scheme.
Yeah.
And Z is a regular scheme, and they're not the same. The tangent bundle of the shifted cotangent bundle, tangent complexes things into B1 and B0.
Here's the confusion. Okay, so what I mean by this is not... Yeah, okay, so this is going to be... spec sim I believe it's something like this.
But I think what you really want is that of H1 of the tangent bundle.
Yeah, well, so, okay, this is supposed to be like classical spec or something like that. Hey, we're agreeing with each other. So what you want to do is take the cotangent.
It's not like notation, because for me, okay. Like if Z is smooth, you start minus one, it's just shifted cotangent bundle. That's
it. Yeah, yeah.
Like a direct, which is not what you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We use that notation for something else. It's confusing.
I see. Okay. Yeah, so...
I think T star minus 1 on C actually has a precise meaning, which is not what you want.
Yeah. Well, the thing that you're talking about, I would write like something like this. I would use like a blackboard bold L.
Bold L?
Yeah. Okay. It's semantics. Yeah.
I think it's not like you know, by T star of minus one, because T star minus one just strictly means absolutely different thing.
Okay. I see.
I think I would be happy if you.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't do absolutely any notation other than this.
I see. So the reason I use the notation is just to emphasize that this is like a coming from the cotangent complex in a way. We're good with that?
Okay. I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It's a fair point. Sorry. Okay. Right, so maybe I'll call this a 1.1. It's maybe like HKR type theorems. So I told you what the Rinkin-Gates-Gray singular support is. What do I mean to decategorify it? Well, before I get into that, let me tell you two nice theorems by Fagan, Segan, and Tolle-Pragel. So Fagan, Segan tells you that if you take the periodic cyclic homology of coherent sheaves, of perf on Z, you get a two-periodized singular cohomology. So I always denote this by a, maybe I should denote it just by like a two-peer. Okay, and I'll say in a moment what periodic cyclic is meant to be, or sort of what kind of object it is. And Tolle-Pragel, a few years ago, computed that periodic cyclic homology of coherent sheaves on Z is equivalent to Borel-Mohr homology on Z, two periodized. And so what I mean by on Z, I mean take the underlying classical scheme of Z, take the associated complex analytic space, or you know, with the analytic topology, and then look at Borel-Mohr homology on that space and singular cohomology on that space, respectively, for these two theorems.
Yeah, what's the assumption on Z here? Was it smooth or?
There's slightly different hypotheses on Z in each of these theorems, and I wanted to kind of elide to, but it doesn't need to be smooth. It can be like, I think it's like finite type for Fagan, Segan, and.
So can I just take classical but singular scheme?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So. Sorry. Let me tell you about periodics. So this HP, the notation for this is. This is the notation for periodic cyclic homology. And what you should think of this as doing is allowing you to take the Durham cohomology of a DG category in some sense. So gives and that's why I use the HKR type theorems in the title right there. So what the HKR theorem tells you is that if you take Hochschild homology of a what is it again? I guess Q co on X. you get differential forms on X out of it. Correspondingly, if you take like Hochschild cohomology, you would get a multi-vector fields on X. So these are HKR type theorems. We're not taking a Hochschild homology, we're instead taking periodic cyclic homology. And what this has the effect of doing is the effect of taking cohomology of differential forms. So we get Durham cohomology out of it rather than the differential forms we would see if we just took Hochschild homology.
It's a little more than HKR because HKR is only in the smooth case, right? I mean,
no, HKR is true for any ring, but you just use any ring, but you use the cotangent complex.
Okay.
I wish I could make this thing. Okay. yes.
But that's a theorem that can help you relate to a single homology. But in particular, is this theorem saying that that if you do it for the derived scheme, that the answer only depends on the underlying classical scheme?
So I think for Fagan and Segan, this is a they only consider classical schemes in their formulation. Pragel considers like derived schemes. I am not sure the exact type. I mean, actually, Fagan and Segan might require smooth. Now that I think about it, I'm not quite sure.
Fagan and Segan result is really due to Alvin Kahn, right?
Say that again.
Fagan and Segan theorem is really due to Alvin Kahn.
Oh, is it? Okay.
But the periodic cyclic homology does not change if I do an open extension. Hmm. So it's insensitive.
I see.
To any derived structure.
Okay.
I mean, there's really kind of difference between perfect complexes and coherent complexes. Right? I mean, suppose you have a derived scheme such as an underlying scheme, the underlying classical scheme is smooth.
Yeah.
Then the derived scheme, perfect and coherent complexes are different, but on the underlying classical scheme, they're the same. So somehow, I was saying that in this case, these two categories will have the same HB.
I may be wrong, but every smooth derived scheme is classical. Like, I don't think you can put.
No, I'm supposed to have a derived scheme. Oh, yeah. You mean that if it's but again, you didn't say what the assumption is. I'm saying that suppose that they have a derived scheme, such that the underlying classical scheme is smooth.
Yeah, I'm saying in that case your derived scheme was actually secretly classical the whole time. I might be wrong about that.
No, this is.
Oh.
The derived scheme is smooth.
No.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay, I see.
I don't know what the assumptions in this theorem are.
Yeah.
If there are no assumptions, then somehow. Well, anyhow, so it's kind of looks strange to me that the answer that looks like the left hand side doesn't depend on the. In both cases, looks like it doesn't depend on the derived direction. So.
The classic result from the 80s is that if I look at periodic cyclic of the ring of functions locally, then that just does not depend on the derived structure at all.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. K and G theory don't depend on the derived structure at all either.
Let me see. Yeah. Oh, did you want? Okay, I see. So the reason I put these on the board up here is just to say, a Rankine gate square singular support, it tells you the difference between, it records the difference between co and perf. Here, the first theorem I can think of is decategorifying perf. The second theorem I can think of decategorifying co. One might ask, what if I consider HP of some intermediate subcategory, which I will call co sub lambda? So this right here is the full subcategory on objects in co, whose singular support is contained inside lambda some conic subset of sig.
Z. You are assuming that Z squared is one.
Yes. Yeah, so. Yeah, sorry, I should have used different letters for stating these. okay, so, right, so now maybe our goal is sort of coming into clear perspective. So the goal now is to decategorify co sub lambda z in the following sense. I want to find a singular support theory for classes in the Borel-Mohr homology of the such that this is immobile. Okay. Such that the periodic cyclic homology of co sub lambda of z is equivalent to classes or chains in Borel-Mohr homology with certain as yet unknown prescribed singular support.
Subspace in HP of co, the full co, and why is this? Why do you want this map to be injector?
Say it again.
If you want to do it this way, it looks like in particular you're kind of implicitly assuming that this thing you want to compute this HP of co lambda is a subspace inside it maps injectively into HP of co z.
Yeah.
Why would you expect it to be injector? Actually, I think is it like injective if lambda is zero? For instance, if you look at this
theorems
above, then H cohomology, the map from cohomology to cohomology with Borel-Mohr homology.
Cohomology maps non-trivially into Borel-Mohr homology when Z is singular. Like there is a
But here you want this HP of co lambda to be subspace of.
What I want to say is
so you want to just compute the image. I don't understand why this thing for writing this for lambda equal to zero doesn't it contradict this the theorems?
Why would it? If I took lambda equals zero, I would get perf.
Right, but writing this way means that somehow this HP of co lambda maps injectively into HP of co z of the full co. And in that case, it doesn't.
You're saying what doesn't it map injectively? Perf into co? Or what?
HP
like the
of
HP?
As far as I said, doesn't map injectively to HP of co.
Yeah, but there is a map, right? There is a.
You want equality here, right? So.
I'm being very.
Equality means that the map.
Yeah,
the map is injective.
Okay, maybe. I want a correspondence of some kind.
Maybe you want to find the image.
I said it's okay. There's a map in one direction, but no.
Okay. No, which is the direction?
This direction, yes.
Okay.
From the left hand side. He'll tell.
Yeah, I'm gonna compute the left hand side.
So it's just squiggle, maybe.
Yeah. Oh man, what have I done here? Okay. There we go. Sorry to the people on Zoom, I don't know. right. Okay, so, but what I will tell you about first is a theory of singular support for Borel-Mohr homology. And how that figures into the answer, eventually. I have everything I want, I think. Okay, so right, so this second section is singular support. For Borel-Moore chains, or Borel-Moore classes, whichever you might think. Okay, so let me just start with an observation that on a smooth oriented manifold, we have Poincaré duality.
Can I ask you one other?
Sure.
So for your theorem, is lambda closed and conical, or is it allowed to be locally closed? Like, am I allowed to do something like an open conical set?
For lambda. I see. Let me think for a second. It can be open. Right, so on a smooth oriented manifold, let's call it M, we have Poincaré duality, and this puts singular cohomology in bijection with, it's n minus. Now this is a quality. We're good there. However, when M is singular, or maybe I should say like when X is singular, these two things aren't in duality anymore. In fact, Borel-Moore homology is, in a sense, bigger than singular cohomology. And so you can view this sort of difference, or the divergence between homology and cohomology, as a measure of the singularity of your space. I was going to include a sort of example of a space for which cohomology and homology diverge. Here's a very simple one, and one that maybe physicists here like thinking about. So the doubled cone. So this is a surface of real dimension 2, and it's contractible, so its cohomology is 0, but its Borel-Moore homology will actually be non-zero into 2 degrees. Did you want to say something? Oh, okay. Yes. So maybe. Well, okay, not zero, but yeah. Maybe I'll say trivial. Has two non-trivial groups. Okay, and so I want to say the failure of a class in Borel-Moore homology to have a cochain representative is, in a sense, a kind of singularity for that Borel-Moore chain. So failure of Borel-Moore chain to have, singular cochain representative it's the notion of singularity that we'll be working with. Okay, and so our goal then is to capture the directions in which these singularities arise in the way that we had seen in these other examples of singular support. So it might not be exactly the same, but whatever it is, our goal now is to define singular support for Borel-Moore chains. And moreover, I'm going to add this desiderata, so I'll say goal to define singular support for Borel-Moore chains and one desiderata I want is that this singular support, however I define it, it should be intrinsic to X. So you'll notice that in all the other examples of singular support I gave, they live in something like the cotangent bundle to a manifold X, or in the case that Z was quasi-smooth, it lives in the singular variety associated to Z, intrinsic to X. Right, but okay, so far what I've been talking about is some kind of singular manifold. There's not really like a clear sort of like, I feel like I'm gonna get accosted by someone, but like there's not some sort of like clear cotangent bundle or cotangent cone associated with this kind of thing. And so, a priori, and this is sort of, I wanna say this is what David Nadler initially did. He was the first one to try to define a kind of singular support for Brill-Moore chains. What he did is realized X as the zero fiber of some map on a smooth variety, and then used the directions on that smooth variety to talk about the singular support for these chains. But sort of what I've done in my thesis and what I'll be presenting briefly now is how you can actually come up with a theory of singular support for X that is intrinsic to X, but it comes at the cost of sort of enhancing X from just a singular space to some kind of to a quasi-smooth scheme, just like we have in a ranking gate score. Okay, so that was a lot of talking. Let me write something down now, if I can find it. So rather than consider all singular spaces or like all kind of singular manifolds, let's just look at zero fibers. So look at zero fibers of maps of the following form. It's going to be a map from X some smooth complex variety. To V, some finite dimensional vector space. And this is a map of schemes over C. Okay, and so now, rather than consider the classical zero locus, I want to consider the derived zero locus. That will be some derived scheme whose underlying classical scheme is the classical zero locus and whose associated analytic space covers a lot of examples that you have seen in your lives. So I want to convince you, yeah.
I assume you have V smooth on that.
V is a finite dimensional vector space considered as a C scheme. Yeah. So maybe vect. Yeah. So consider okay, and so the zero fiber is like the prototypical example of a quasi-smooth derived scheme. Quasi-smooth things locally look exactly like this, exactly as the fibers of maps between smooth schemes. And so this thing, this derived zero locus, will have this zero locus will have an associated singular variety. And now Sorry, I keep losing. Losing this thing. Oh no. How do I get it? Oh, there we go. Okay, and so now I'm ready to state, I guess, the first piece of original work in this talk. So this is a theorem. So the theorem is that there exists a sheaf. I should maybe say perverse sheaf. So there exists a perverse sheaf. I'll denote it M sub F slash X. This is to allude to the microlocalization of Kashiwara and Shapira. It is not the functor of Kashiwara microlocalization. It's a derived variant that I cook up in my paper, but I don't want to talk about that in this particular talk. Okay, so there's a perverse sheaf on the derived conormal bundle right, and in this instance, this is actually equivalent to Z of F times V dual, such that the global sections of this sheaf is equivalent to Borel-Mohr homology. And the sections of the sheaf supported on the zero section of the conormal bundle is equivalent to singular cohomology of Z of F. Right. So this is in some way what going derived does for you. If you take the derived zero locus rather than the classical one, you have an actual well-defined conormal bundle over Z. In the case that Z is a zero fiber, not just quasi-smooth, embedding into some smooth scheme, this is going to be actually a trivial bundle. And the theorem is that I cook up some sheaf on this conormal bundle whose global sections are Borel-Mohr homology and whose section supported on the zero section is the singular cohomology.
Is this sheaf constructible? Is it perverse?
Yes. Well, yeah. Okay, that may be a... I may have misplaced that perverse, but it's not a single sheaf. It's a, it's constructible.
Okay. Yeah, restrict it to the zero section. Just get the constant sheaf.
That's sort of a, the Kashiwara-Shapira microlocalization has like a lot of these kind of identities. Like when you star restrict or shriek restrict the zero.
Push it forward to Z. I mean, have a projection from like your normal bundle to Z itself. If you push it forward, you get the dualizing shape. Is it?
Yes. Yeah. And so I should say this is conic with respect to the scaling action on the conormal bundle.
This conormal bundle is related to H1 of the
cotangent
complex?
Yes.
So was it going to be...
You're anticipating sort of the next theorem, yeah.
But if it's conic, well, then pushing forward is the same as pulling it back.
Yeah, to the zero segment. I mean, but that's sort of what...
But in one case, you get the dualizing shape, and then I get the constant shape,
You have to be careful about whether you're like star pulling back or shriek pulling back. So like a...
So you're saying that if you start rolling the bullet back, you get the dualized distributed shrink bullet back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
In fact, the reverse is just nice to have them. Why is it kind of important for you that it's perverse and not a complex?
Yeah, I think I misplaced this adjective. I think so. In the next thing that I write, it's important that I'll get a different sheaf that's perverse, and in that case, it's important. In this case, I could just write a constructible complex of sheaf.
And you know an example where it's not perverse?
Well, I kind of think it can't be just be, well, what do I want to say? Okay, so what Kevin, I mean, I'll sort of spoil the minor punchline here. So this thing, you know, it's a priori defined on this conormal bundle, but it'll actually end up being supported on a copy of the singular variety that embeds into this conormal bundle. And you know, that has a different dimension than the, yeah, so there's like a shift thing, yeah. So, but anyway, the pullback to that that thing, that will be perverse. So when you, yeah. Okay, so, right. So, okay, so how does this help us in our quest to find a singular support for Brill-Moore chains? Well, what I've achieved by looking at the sheaf is a family of, I want to say, chain theories, or, you know, a family of vector spaces that interpolates between cohomology and Brill-Moore homology. The way I achieve this is by varying the support conditions. Between the extremes of 0 and the whole conormal bundle, you get various spaces, which I denote by H lambda Z of F. Which by definition are sections supported on lambda of the sheaf that I define. And then, okay, maybe I want to say the singular support then of a Brill-Moore chain, I'm going to call it sigma, is the smallest lambda such that sigma belongs to H not lambda.
Yeah, I would say it belongs to the image of that, because...
Yeah. Yeah. So what I want to say is there's a filtration, not necessarily an ejective.
Image of the right one.
Oh, yeah. Okay. What do I want to see here? Okay, but okay. So that seems great. There's a minor problem, though, in the sort of task that I set up, which is that what do I want to say? I want it to be like intrinsic to my quasi-smoothing, right? And so here is the second punchline. Actually, so there's going to be two punchlines, like one after another, and then my time is up, so I'll stop talking. Okay, so this is, I guess, like a second part of the results, which is that, right. Wondering how much to write here. Okay, and so what I show is actually a bit more general that I've been talking about. Like my Z doesn't necessarily have to be a zero fiber for this theorem to hold. So given any closed immersion, where this is quasi-smooth, and this is smooth, still working over Z. Then M Z sub X is supported on the copy of the singular variety inside of the conormal bundle. And moreover, there exists an equivalence between the Joy sheaf, okay, maybe I shouldn't have said that on camera, but between the canonical sheaf of twisted vanishing cycles on any oriented negative one shifted symplectic scheme and my M Z comma X. So, right, so in case you, this is up to shifts. I'm sort of ignoring some shifts here. Yeah.
When I write T star minus one here, is that?
Sorry. Yeah, I'm reverting back to my old notation that I should.
No, but that time you really meant it, because you got the Joy sheaf you wanted
well,
it to
Well, that's
be.
What makes sense. I get this time.
Yeah, yeah.
T star minus one.
Okay.
Which is not the same.
I see.
I
wanted to have an oriented negative one shifted structure. Okay. Okay, so this phi right here, in case you haven't seen it, this thing is a perverse sheaf. It lives on this scheme right here. It is meant to categorify a Donaldson-Thomas invariance. It's defined locally in terms of vanishing cycles. So the way you prove this theorem is essentially to reduce to a computation where you compute that some kind of microlocalization in like the classical Kashiwara-Shapira sense is equivalent to some kind of vanishing cycles. And that's it's very long and technical and hard. Anyway, I have nothing insightful to say about that. But now, given this, on to the main result.
Can you
use
this format to construct your mu in the first place?
Say again?
You use this formula to construct your mu in the first place?
Yes. Well, I mean, I think it's more interesting in the opposite direction. Like, defining this is really hard. Like, you need to show a lot of gluing. So yeah, but this is sort of defined in a very easy way. You, like, do a derived deformation to the normal cone, then pull back your sheaf to the complement of the zero fiber of that deformation normal bundle, perform nearby cycles, and then Fourier transform. So it's the same as like the original Kashiwara-Shapira microlocalization. But, you know, there's no sort of, the only issue is you're trading sort of, when you do that, it's like very much not clear that it's intrinsic to Z, whereas this is intrinsic to Z.
That's also not clear it's intrinsic to V in
second. Yeah, yeah.
As you assume it's a critical locus.
Right.
But wouldn't you say that like when you are in this setting like you've written above,
yeah,
wouldn't T star minus one of Z be a critical locus of some function pulled from F?
Yeah, it would.
And
yeah.
So is there some sense in which the vanishing cycles of the critical locus matches your construction in some simple way? Or?
Say again. Is there a case in which what would match?
So if you're in this kind of
where
things global,
yeah,
and I were to take the vanishing cycles of some function, would that be obviously the same as what you do?
The mu, you mean?
Yeah.
No, that's the hard computation. I mean, the proof is reducing to exactly that case.
I see, so the hard thing was patching.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, okay. I'm over time, but let me write just one last theorem here. Oh. Okay. All right, so now at this point, I want you to remember that the Rankine-Gates query singular support lived in exactly where this sheaf has now been found to live. You know, there's a question. Does it decategorify to this sheaf? And the answer is yes. So this is the theorem. Right. And so this is the decategorifying. This is the statement that I've been alluding to in the title, the whole thing. So actually for this, I go back to requiring that my Z is a zero locus, that it's a global complete intersection. So let Z, and that's just because the proof I have for it, that's just the current technical limitations I have. So let this be a zero fiber for a map of the form that I have over there. Then we have an equivalence of the periodic cyclic homology of co lambda z with the two periodized microlocal homology. I mean, yeah, I call this a microlocal homology, but the thing that I wrote before. And so let me just quickly give some indications to the proof. So you first come up with an equivalence between coherent sheaves and graded matrix factorizations for an auxiliary function that you mentioned whose critical locus gives you the shifted cotangent bundle. You then compare HP of graded matrix factorizations to usual matrix factorizations, and then you use this result of Efimov, you know, with sort of more naturality, and there's like a different approach you need to take to it, to compare HP of matrix factorizations to vanishing cycles. And then the reason why I wrote this over here, because, you know, this is not necessarily like needed in order to set up the singular support. The reason I wrote this is because this is the final piece. This right here is locally vanishing cycles, and that connects it to event, you know, that's the piece that connects us to the microlocal homology or to the thing at the end. So I think I'll stop there.
Okay. Questions for Kenny?
This last theorem, so the statement itself makes sense for any Z, right? I mean, not necessarily for global complete section.
Yeah, the statement makes sense for any Z.
So you
yeah.
just don't know how to prove it, I think it's wrong.
No, I just don't know how to. I mean, I think it's actually right that you could put any quasi smooth. I just don't know how to prove it. And part of that is like, what ends up happening is like when you find this equivalence between co and graded matrix factorizations, the way you show that, like, you want to show that singular support conditions on co get translated to support conditions for those matrix factorizations. And in order to do that, I use a description of singular support as being support for a categorical action on co of some other category of sheaves on like the base loop space of the, yeah. And so for that, I need to like trivialize or have the description as a zero fiber. But I mean, I'm pretty sure it patches. I just don't know how to describe the singular support nicely to like be able to translate one condition to the other. Yeah. Yep.
So when you're on like a, when you have a stack, the periodic cyclic homology is like no longer the Brill-Moore homology, or it like naturally becomes the K theory.
Yeah.
Like the simplest example being like BC star.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that there's like some chance of like,
something like this.
K motive or something, like repeating this thing with like some kind of like K motives and like.
I haven't thought about it, but I'm perpetually optimistic that like I don't know. I want to say it sounds plausible to me. I mean, like, Yeah, I just haven't thought about it at all, to be honest. The stacky counterpart to these kind of results are something that I've just like sort of sinfully put off thinking about. But there are certain components that like don't go through directly, as you say, like HP is no longer, no more. Anyway.
Yeah, but I think if you switch it with like K motives or G motives, it
I see. Work. Okay. I'll look into that. Oh yeah, Kevin.
You can model like Borel more than ordering cohomology by looking at like cycles satisfying certain geometric properties.
Yeah.
Can you do the same here?
For like this thing
yeah.
you're talking about? Yeah, so that was the hope. I mean, okay, not the hope. What I want to say, like when David first introduced me to these objects, he was sort of like asked me to find something like this, and then the project kind of devolved into derived algebraic geometry. But you're looking for something like maybe like an intersect, like a McPherson style like intersection cohomology description, where like you look at so I think something like that should exist there, where like you get these by considering only a certain like subset of Borel-Moore chains that maybe satisfy some kind of property. I think the thing we were looking for is like, like singular cohomology. Okay, if we're on a smooth thing, singular cohomology is Durham cohomology. So you can describe that using smooth differential forms. Borel-Moore homology can be described as using currents. And so the idea is that you would get these in-between things by restricting your currents to ones with certain wavefront set, prescribed wavefront sets. And that's what I think it's still plausible. I haven't done anything.
More is like all submanifolds. Singular is like submanifolds locally created by some work functions. They have a nice normal bundle.
Yeah.
And then there should be something in the middle.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
If there are no more questions, let's thank Kenny again.